Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive insights in how we can live a longer, happier, and healthier life. We always get our information from quality institutions, and then those articles that are published in the National Library of Medicine, the official repository for the best science that we have, is what I share with you, different every single day. For example, from King's College London, an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry found that improvement in adults with major depression disorder when they were given probiotics. A trial reported in the journal found improvements among men and women with major depressive disorder, or MDD, who consumed a probiotic supplement, what was called Protexin, P-R-O-T-E-X-I-N, containing 14 different strains of beneficial bacteria. Of the participants who were using the antidepressant for 6 weeks or more with incomplete response were randomized to receive 4 capsules of the probiotic or matching to placebo for 8 weeks. The probiotic supplement contained a colony of these positive good bacteria. I won't go through all of them, but like the bifidobacterium, bifidum, and the bacillus subtilis, these were just some of them, the lactobacillus cassia. Anyhow, the more varieties you use of different types of probiotics, the greater the impact upon your overall immune system. But in this case, they weren't testing the immune system. They were looking at depression and anxiety symptoms, and they scored them at the beginning, at 4 weeks and 8 weeks. Here's the outcome. Those depressive individuals who received the probiotics had far greater improvement in depressive and anxiety symptoms at 8 weeks in comparison to the placebo group. Of course, there's no side effects that are negative either, only positive. So take your probiotics every day. Now from Zhejiang University in China, they found that sweet cherries, that's the Bing cherries, contain antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, and that supports your liver health. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition. And by the way, there's an abundance of scientific literature showing the role of anthocyanidins from grapes, from red wine, from resveratrol, and they're anti-inflammatory. They're anti-hyperlipidemic, and specifically what is called the cyanidin 3 glucoside variant, quote, has been reported to ameliorate hepatic stenosis and adipose inflammation. So have a handful of red cherries. Now you can get them dried. That's how I use most of my tart cherries, the Montmorency cherries, which is great for preventing pain. And because I'm training for some upcoming state championships, and I'm cross-training, meaning biking, swimming, weight work, VersaClimber, which is the best of all. There's no better piece of equipment than the VersaClimber. Hits every muscle in your body. And track work. You're going to create inflammation. That is inevitable. But what I call the laws of compensation, which means that to the degree that you have created any imbalance in your life, financial, emotional, relationship, health, through trauma, through genetic predisposition, through nutrient deficiencies, whatever the cause, bad attitude, epigenetic input from your family growing up, you may not even be aware of. No matter what is the cause, you need to compensate by doing just the opposite. So that's the laws of compensation. And some people might say, well, it's a trade-off philosophy, meaning, okay, I can wake up this morning and say, well, it's pouring rain out. I'm going to pass on today's exercise. Or I can say, not a problem. Warm weather, 90 degrees, rain, it's like taking a shower. and go out and do my work. I'll just put a hat on. That's what I do. And then come back and say, okay, I just ran fast at for a 10K, 6 miles. So now I've created free radicals, lots of them. Please listen up, all of you exercise enthusiasts, and I hope we have a lot of them. The exercise is very important. It keeps your telomeres, the end caps of your chromosomes, it keeps them intact. And as long as you have longer telomeres, you're going to have a longer life for that cell line. But when you exercise, especially vigorously, more than a couple miles, let's say more than 10,000 steps a day, and if you're really into training, not even long-distance training, but let's say training for a 10K, that would be short racing, you're creating billions of free radicals. These are inflammatory agents, and those attack the cell. They hit the cell, and the cell can take some amount of attack. And when you're young, you have all the nutrients necessary to go in there and start repairing the damage. No problem. That's why, let's say you go out drinking one night and you come back and you think, whoa, I drank too much. Not drunk, but drank too much. Okay, the next morning you wake up, more often than not, you're going to feel fine. Now do the same thing at 50 and the same thing at 80. Huge difference in the outcome. It's like having a real antique car. If it has 100,000 miles on it, and it's a supercar, a muscle car, I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't take it if you gave it to me, because you don't know how that car was driven. Now, if you show me a 57 Chevy convertible Bel Air with a 100-point restoration, meaning a frame-off restoration, so someone took years and tens of thousands of dollars go through every part in that car and brought it back to a new state as if it were just on a showroom. Oh, then, oh, you bet. That's a great investment. Those things don't lose value. They go up in value. I hate to think of how many old cars I've given away and traded in over the decades that today I probably have $1 million because of some of those cars are worth $150,000 each. I bought them for, you know, $5,000. So, but it's all about what is the state of health of your cells, your organs, your brain, your liver, your kidney. And here's a very important lesson. If you do not go into the biochemistry and repair the damage that was done at one point in your life, don't assume that it just automatically heals itself. Yeah, the liver can heal about 70% of itself. And that's good if you do the right thing with it. But the kidneys, the heart, the brain, the eyes, the macula, the lungs, no. So you have to have specific protocols to help rebalance that and hence compensation. So like I would go out in the rain, providing it's, you know, not cold rain, but, and I would not stop my exercise. But when I came back in, I can assure you, I'm going to have my coenzyme Q10 and vitamin C. I'm going to have quercetin and magnesium and calcium and zinc and vitamin D3. I'm also going to have juice, maybe green apple with some lemon in it. And I'll have coconut water. One small container contains about between 400 and 500 milligrams of potassium, one of the best ways of getting potassium in the system because it's in a juice form from coconut. It's immediately and fully absorbed. So now, yes, I've stressed the body, especially the musculature, but I've also created endorphins, the natural opiates in the brain that allow you to feel good. That's why we call it runner's high. Ask anyone that runs more than 6 miles, maybe 10 miles. About the seventh or eighth mile, they start to feel very blissful, very relaxed. They're in the groove, in the zone. And that can last for hours, up to 6 hours. So you're in a much better mood just by exercising in the morning. For people with depression and anxiety, it's particularly important for them. But let's say that you didn't have the compensatory nutrient intake. Well, now, yes, you still have the endorphins. You have less lean body, more lean muscle mass, and less fat around the belly, body mass index. you also have probably less hydration, so you're going to be underutilized in water. That's why you all should have an impedance scale. It costs like $40. You step on it, you program it, and every time you step on it, it tells you your percentage of bone, of fat, body mass index, lean muscle, and hydration, and general weight. And that way you keep a record of that. So now my muscles are stronger, I have more endurance, strength, stamina, balance. All that is great. But please listen carefully. I've also, every time I exercise, I prematurely speed up the aging process. I've depleted the mitochondria, the energy factories, and if I don't rebalance by compensating, then sooner or later, I'm going to get up and go out for a run. I'm going to think, wow, man, I'm having a hard time, you know, I'm usually training at a six-minute mile. I'm having a hard time running 8 minutes. Wonder why. And why don't you ask the millions upon millions upon millions of athletes who didn't compensate? And yes, they benefited while they were running, but also they prematurely aged themselves. I had this conversation with the greatest marathoner in world history up to this point, Greta. Do you remember Greta? I think she won around 10 New York City marathons, and including that embarrassing one where she had got diarrhea and the damn camera from the network kept looking at this, her grabbing paper towels. That was gross and terrible. And so Peter Roth, who was the Treasury Secretary of the New York Running Club and was a friend of Greta, said, Gary, could you work with her? It took me under 5 minutes to figure out what was wrong. She was consuming a product that goes right through the system. It causes diarrhea. And when she stopped that, diarrhea stopped. It wasn't complicated. But when I gave her a whole protocol so she could maintain her fitness without prematurely aging her body, she didn't use it. And about a year goes by, and I talk with her and saw her in a race. And, you know, she's very pleasant, very nice person. And I'm fine. And the mindset is, if I'm fast enough to win all these marathons, no matter where I go in the world, I don't need anything else. Okay, fair enough. But it's not true. Every single one of the marathoners ended up having what I consider substantially shorter career because they didn't compensate before and after. They just muscled it out. So they became very focused upon how to get faster, but not how to protect your body from aging. The Natural Living and Running Walking Club, of which I'm guessing probably 40,000 people over the decades have joined us, trained, raced shorter races, most marathons, at least once, did it. That was in their young person's. A lot of young runners want to get in a marathon, so it's on their young person's bucket list, right? Like, when you're young and you're not afraid to travel and you go to places that are exotic, that's a lifetime memory, something that was remarkable in experience, and so later you can think back on it. People are less likely to do that later in life, less likely to train for a marathon, even though they could and should. But in any case, my whole message here is compensate. So if you're around negative people, be around positive people. If you're thinking negative thoughts, think positive thoughts. If you're stuck, with what a term I coined, and if it makes sense, use it, emotional hoarding. We know about physical hoarding. You see it. Walk in someone's house, apartment, you go, oh my goodness, why? Why'd you keep all this stuff? And then they all have excuses. But emotional hoarding is you can't let go of something. You just won't let go of it. You're tenacious. And that keeps you from growing beyond the point of that not letting go. You got to be free. The Chinese have a saying, to travel far, travel light. That means emotionally as well. So you've got to compensate by bringing more joy and laughter and humor and good people and fun people, non-judgmental people into your life. A friend of mine, Neil Kramer, we were best buddies for decades until he died. He knew I had a Wednesday party back in the 1970s and 80s. It went on for over 20 years. And we would have someone would do the cooking. Now, these were not chefs. But it was fun. And I would always prepare my own food separately because they sure didn't know how to cook vegan. If they did, it was just, here's some brown rice and some soy sauce. But that wasn't the point of the evening. The point of the evening was to share the joys of living. And he came to it, and the idea was all of us had to contribute something that was unique about life. And then everyone could pile in on it and add something else. But everyone had to contribute something. And they did. And we were gone for about 4 or 5 hours. And that was it. That was the whole evening. And I look forward to this. And even Marty Feldman would come, and he would sit across from the dining room in the living room that I had. And I said, Marty, join in. No, I'm intimidated. And I said, why? Because someone's a Nobel Prize winner or someone, they're famous people? Because they're not here to share their discoveries and their success within their careers. They're here to share the humanness, something that is an equalizer. We're all equal as human beings in the fact that we all have a spirit. We're all sacred beings. We're sentient. And we're here to share something that we consider remarkable in our mindset. And then everybody adds into it. And each week, someone else leads off. And Neil came over to me one evening. He says, wow, here I'm graduated Columbia Law, and I have all this experience. And I didn't know there was another way of communicating. I thought when people get together who are very heady, intellectual, medical doctors, scientists, writers, that their conversations were very heady. And no, these are just fun, laughing. Do you think all these people that have these backgrounds, you think Einstein was an anal person that couldn't laugh, couldn't find joy, couldn't look at his own human foibles? That's what makes people interesting, not their success. We can all be successful at something, and we are. But not everybody can be vulnerable enough to share their humanness. And we can enjoy that journey because they're introspective enough to say, wow, here's what I did. Sometimes very positive, very upbeat, and sometimes it's not. This is how I dealt with a crisis. And whoa, I didn't understand I could deal with crisis outside of just being emotional about it, feeling regret and betrayed and hurt and keeping that energy going. No. And suddenly people are revealing, and that big reveal is so important. In any case, I miss those days. But I was interested to see how some of my friends felt that they couldn't make themselves that vulnerable. Anyhow, just an aside. But it's just one of the things that we have to do in life. We have to compensate. Don't take yourself so seriously. There's an old adage, Italian adage, the king and the peasant go in the same dirt. Different funerals, same dirt. Okay? Let's live in a more humble way. Let's be more patient. Let's be more tolerant. Let's be more open. Let's be more accepting. Let's be more curious. Let's bring back the ingenuity of how children figure things out by taking them apart. And we've all done it. We took stuff apart, didn't know how to put it back together, but it was fun taking it apart. And then one day it's fun putting it back together again. Then it's fun solving problems instead of becoming the problem. Just want to share that with you because all this has a great deal to do with how fast you're going to age or how slow you're going to age, how much longer you're going to live, and the quality of life when you're living that. I was just thinking about this morning when I was doing my workout, and I was watching my dogs run in the fields where I run with them in the morning and throughout the day, and they were just having so much fun running and chasing each other and rolling over and playing. And I thought there was a time, and I'll bet many of you remember this, up at the Fertiller Farm where people would come and we would have so much fun. Almost everybody was young, in their 20s. I was in my young 20s. And everybody Everybody had their life ahead of them. They weren't afraid. Now you go back 50 years and you start thinking, would I have the same capacity today to be as that free and open and curious of wonderment of life? Or have I got myself stuck in fearing my death, in fearing disease, in fearing, you know, fearing all the things that could happen? Because one will liberate you to be as young as you want to be in your mind, and vigorous and curious, have more remarkable moments, and the other does not. The other limits you. It's all a matter of perception. Change your perception, change your reality. In any case, I just want to share those little anecdotal sidebars. And by the way, when I was just in New York a week ago, I noticed something. Now, maybe you've noticed also, but there's always been some people who clearly are suffering from mental conditions around the city, and especially up on the Upper West Side. And when I was walking to meet a friend to see a movie, which I highly recommend, it's Mount Lincoln Center. It's a drama based upon true events. It's called Chile 76. It was about Pinochet, the coup to overtake and destroy and kill Allende, and the rigidity of the state. And it's a very good film. But as I'm walking down, I'm seeing a lot of homeless people in the streets. Okay. Everything else seemed normal, all right? Except how many empty stores there were. Phenomenal amount of empty stores. But then when I got down to around two blocks from Lincoln Center, there was this guy who had a long bar, rod, steel rod, and he was swinging it at people and swinging it at cars and going from the street back onto the sidewalk and swinging at people. And so I crossed in front of him and was on the other side, and he looks at me, and then he starts to come across, and he's got it in his hand, and I'm thinking, okay, what are my choices? To stop him without hurting him. That's the goal. But then a car beeped its horn, and he went swinging at the car and smashing it. And then my friend came. We went to the movie. Nobody looked up. It was like, okay, we've got a guy who could hurt us, kill us, and we're going to act like it doesn't exist. It's like New Yorkers are the only people in America that will walk across the street knowing there's a car bearing down them and choose not to look at the car. Like, I dare you hit me, right? You only say. And now this become the new normal. And I saw that repeatedly around the city, where people are maladapting to the behavior instead of having some meetings and saying, how can we help these people? Because they're going to kill people. They have. They're going to push them on subway tracks. They have. They're going to slash innocent people's faces. Yesterday, a 75-year-old woman got busted in the mouth for no reason except someone decided to bust her in the mouth. Are these people just angry? And what happens when we just think, just adapt to it? It's not going to change. Yeah, it's going to get worse. Just want to share that. So we're not dealing with our problems. We're avoiding them. And also, finally, from this study, it shows that sitting tied to raise risk of death from 14 diseases. Quote, if you sit for 6 hours a day or more, your risk of dying early jumps 19% compared with people who sit fewer than 3 hours. Wow. You increase your risk of dying from cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, kidney disease, suicide, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that's COPD, lung disease, liver disease, peptic ulcer, and digestive disorders, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and musculoskeletal disorders. So that means sitting, for whatever reason, at a desk, sitting watching television, you're harming yourself, and now you're speeding up your death. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And by the way, University of Georgia just said fewer meals, something I've been advocating my whole career, fewer meals can help prevent type 2 diabetes and obesity. And that is just out this morning. So that's important. And vitamin D supplements means a longer lifespan among cancer patients, Michigan State University. Easy to do and not difficult. And Iowa State University cut back on your social media, reduces anxiety, depression, and loneliness. And finally, you can go to Gary and All YouTube or Rumble or Odyssey, and you can download and watch for free my classroom on the air. There are hundreds of these classrooms up there on a variety of topics. So something else you can enjoy each day. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I'm going to play you some clips now. Short, very short, with little topics that we don't pay attention to and we should. And this is something that goes on all the time where members of governmental agencies, in this case, Lewinsky, is invited in and makes a statement like the number one group of people going to hospitals and dying are the unvaccinated. Okay, but it wasn't true. Not at all. The number one group of people going to hospital, and today especially in dying, are the fully vaccinated, and the more vaccines, the more likely they are to be hospitalized and dying. And this is in multiple studies, except these studies don't come from the CDC or the FDA. These are independent of the impact of the pharmaceutical industry. So we're going to go to that, and then we're going to go to one that contradicts it, challenges it. And this one by Dr. Peter McCullough, it's short, it's only a minute long, but talks about the truth of how bad the vaccines are, and it's only going to get worse, especially for those who got vaccinated. So let's go to these two, one and then the other. One's only 30 seconds long, and the other's a little longer, but it just shows you why isn't McCullough invited on any television program to challenge all the myths and lies? He's as orthodox as you get, pro-vaccine, pro-orthodox medicine. In fact, if it weren't for COVID, I would be debating him on the wrongheadedness that he and other cardiologists have taken with a single-minded way of helping people with heart disease and with stents and coronary bypass surgery instead of dealing with something like prevention or natural non-toxic alternatives. Let's go to the clip.
Clear message that is coming through. This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
And we're seeing it in the data. Unvaccinated Americans account for virtually all recent COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths.
We still, to this day, do not have data on people who are coming into the hospitals who are vaccinated. That is a data point that we have lacked.
So, major contradiction. Same woman making a statement that everyone going to the hospital are the unvaccinated, and then saying, but we don't have the data on the people who are vaccinated. Well, then how can you say that the only people coming in are the people who are unvaccinated? She's wrong on both counts. We did have the data, and it was hidden by the manufacturer. And now, by court order, not voluntary, no transparency, no openness. Remember what we were told? Oh, everything's going to be open and above board. No, nothing has been open and above board. You've all been played. You've all been used and abused. I have no other reference that I can call this with legitimacy except medical genocide. I do not blame the people who were angry at their family members who didn't get vaccinated, possibly because they were already infected and therefore had natural immunity. And that was also condemned. Natural immunity means nothing. It's not the only vaccine. Not true. Natural immunity is the best form of vaccine. And yet, it was not advocated. Well, our kids are going to die. No, they're not. They're going to die if you give them the vaccine. But otherwise, it's a 0.0006% death. But with the vaccines, you really increase heart attacks. And, it's only temporary myocarditis. Temporary, transient. No, it's not. No, it's permanent and ultimately leads to death. So everything you were told is a lie. Now let's hear from Dr. Peter McCullough, who is right now talking about what we should have learned and didn't.
Good news for the unvaccinated. They have the best overall COVID outcomes. Anywhere where there's a fair assessment and they have the vaccine records, like in the UK and Australia, the unvaccinated look terrific. The United States, the data simply aren't reliable since the CDC has not released the vaccine administration data. So all these assessments of vaccinated, unvaccinated in the United States are not reliable because electronic medical record has a default in unvaccinated. So we really can't make any inferences on who's hospitalized or not hospitalized based on vaccine status in the United States, but we can in the UK and elsewhere. And it's clear the majority of people hospitalized and dying with COVID through 2021 and 2022 were the vaccinated. This is clear. And in fact, Cleveland Clinic has recently published their data. The unvaccinated have the lowest risk of recurrent Omicron infection. And every additional shot, the risk of more Omicron infections increases. So the vaccines have backfired.
Okay. Find where he's wrong. And he's not alone. Thousands of physicians and scientists are now awakening to the fact that they were played. But now here's something from the same physician, Dr. Peter McCullough. And mind you, he's got three multiple board certifications. He's also a scientist, professor. Here's the latest studies. Quote, roles of bromelain and curcumin in battling recurrent SARS spike protein exposure. Quote, I find it interesting that a large group of post-COVID acute squalene are occurring in those who have taken failed COVID vaccines, meaning more people are coming down with more illnesses that they never had before because of the vaccines. And now listen to this. This is from Kapodistrian University in Athens. This is a scientific article. Curcumin is a natural phenol found in turmeric, a member of the ginger family of plants. Curcumin modulates inflammation, preventing the subsequent cytokine storm by inhibiting multiple transcription factors such as nuclear factor kappa, B, and signal transducer and activator of transcription 3, and downregulating the pro-inflammatory cytokines, as this has been demonstrated in human macrophages after influenza virus infection. Additionally, curcumin inhibits ACE-modulating angiotensin II synthesis and downregulating inflammation, while it also promotes fibrinolysis and the anticoagulation process. The antiviral actions of curcumin against multiple viruses, influenza and hepatitis viruses, herpes viruses, human papillomaviruses, human immunodeficiency virus, the HIV virus, severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus, and other coronaviruses, bacteria, and fungi have been established by experimental evidence. Remarkably, recent evidence from a silico study has demonstrated that curcumin prevents SARS-2 entry into cells by blocking the viral binding sites and the cell's lignans, and it goes on from there. But now, in the same article, Bromelain, quote, is a cysteine protease isolated from the pineapple stem. That's the core of the pineapple. Traditionally, it has been used for its anti-inflammatory healing effects in case of arthritis and injury. And while it's been approved in Europe for the debridgment of burn wounds, experimental studies have demonstrated that bromelain presents unique immunomodulatory actions, downregulating the pro-inflammatory prostaglandin E2 through inhibition of natural tumor necrosis factor BK-kappa and upregulation of anti-inflammatory PGE. It goes on. So what they're saying is it modulates your T cells responses in vitro and vivo. It enhances T cell dependent angiospecific B-cell antibody responses. So both of these ingredients, pineapples, the core of the pineapple, and curcumin together turn off inflammation and help kill viruses, including the COVID-19 virus, and help a person who is in a cytokine storm. And that's what got you in the hospital, got you in the emergency room, got you intubated, which was a bad procedure. Imagine if they would have given everyone coming in an intravenous vitamin C drip of 24,000 milligrams. Why 24,000? Because two studies 3.5 years ago at Wuhan Hospital showed that that was enough in all these thousands of patients who received it to turn off the COVID inflammatory process in the body. Well, but who could profit from that? No one, I see, except the patient. And that we don't care about. So this is brand new, just sharing this today, and I have thousands of studies I could cite you, because I'm reading those studies every day, peer-reviewed studies about what helps the body that is non-pharmaceutical, just natural things. So if it can help reverse this, then why isn't this in every hospital in America? Why isn't hyperbaric oxygen in every hospital in America? Intravenous vitamin drips. But it won't be, because we know who controls the hospital. But it's saying the information's there. These are from peer-reviewed journals. All right? And but you wouldn't know this existed, would you? Now, probably the most influential philanthropist in the world is Bill Gates. And he spreads his money around. And I do not respect Bill Gates. I do not care for Bill Gates. But he is a power with the World Health Organization. And now what's the World Health Organization up to? It's a criminal organization at every level. They want to have a treaty that all the world's countries signs to make them the supreme arbiter of everything involving protocols for pandemics, or what they perceive and call pandemic. And that is their exclusive domain. So it wouldn't matter what you have done in the past, what has worked in the past. If they only want one protocol, then that's the only one by law that can be allowed. And remember, those who signed that treaty, that usurps sovereign laws. And so who's behind that? China's behind it, and Bill Gates is behind it. And where is Bill Gates today? In China. What does that tell you? Well, let's go to Vandana Shiva in this short clip, because she has a lot to say overall about Bill Gates. And here's one thing that she's saying. This is Vandana Shiva.
Bill Gates did not invent anything. The basic program was made by some mathematics professors in a college. The office operating system was by a software engineer, and he bought it for $50,000. He's built the empire by creating patents on software. And the first WTO meeting in Singapore gave him tax concessions, which is why all the IT industry moved to India. The fact that Silicon Valley became India's Silicon Valley is because they could save $40 billion annually, paying lower wages for the same work. It was an outsourcing of software, all for Bill Gates. And then he started to put some of his money into philanthropy. And everyone thinks, wow, he's such a generous man. He gives so much. I've done an analysis in the book. Every place he gives to is his former future markets.
Yeah, he gave, what was it, $55 million and cashed out of the pharmaceutical industry at the top of COVID with $500 million. That's a 10-to-1 investment, and that's how he continues to make billions of dollars, because he ends up owning the patents and gets the royalties, even when everything he has said has been wrong. Everything. But that's neither here nor there. That's the way it works this moment. I had an interview earlier today with Charles Ortlieb, someone who I have a lot of respect for. Charles was the publisher of the New York Native, the one of the leading gay publications in America for 15 years until he had closed down because he went up against the AIDS establishment and they won, he lost. They controlled the narrative. He had the honest narrative. That didn't matter. People became extremely rich by promoting the drugs like AZT, toxic drug. But he has an idea, and we discussed this. I wanted to share this with you because we have people from a full spectrum of professions, activists. And he said, the only way we're going to win in the future on any of these issues is we have to show that what they've said in their writings that they then turn around and use to justify their protocols is wrong. Have these articles rescinded, retracted, taken back. And I thought about that, and I said, well, that's very timely, Charles, because 300 scientific articles that have helped promote the false COVID narratives have been rescinded. 300. I've never seen that in my entire career. So a lot of scientists are now looking for the truth and not finding it in all these articles that everybody claims, well, in this article, such and such. So why don't we take a look at the articles that are out there about COVID or about any topic, I don't care what the topic is, and then find where there's weaknesses or faults in the articles. And there was a study some years ago that just wanted to see how many articles have protocols that, when duplicated, don't give you the same results. And the gold standard of all science is reproducibility. So, for example, I'm right now in the midst of my clinical study on anti-aging number 6, and that means I've done 5 previous. And our previous one was just published in a major, highly respected journal. Well, in order for you to show that you've done something that is legitimate, someone else using your identical protocol should be able to come up with similar or same results. That's the gold standard. And yet, in this review of all these thousands of studies, 67% could not be duplicated. That means they were junk science. So, how many other studies do we have on any topic, like GMOs are safe? No, they're not. No, they're not. But unless you reverse that trend by getting that article that says they're safe and show its flaws, it'll stay. And therefore, they keep going back to the articles and bring in the scientists for hire. They won't bring me in. They won't bring other legitimate scientists in. And that's unfortunate. So virtually all of our science today is up for sale. And there are a lot of legitimate scientists who will not allow that. They won't sell themselves. But far too many raise their hands and says, how much are you giving me? I'll sell out. I'll sell out. You see it at city councils. You see it at state legislatures. You see it with the most powerful lobbying group to state legislators in the country. They've been in business for over 40 years. They've caused thousands of bills to become laws. And yet all of those bills are written by a consortium of about 250 more or less major corporations. Then this group takes them before legislators at these big exclusive wine and dine resorts and then says, here, pass this bill. And then get both the Republican and Democrat to support it, so it got bipartisan support. The public never questions when a law is passed, ever. So, and they've done this. They've gotten away with it. They're still doing it. I've written articles about them. I've exposed them on the air. Doesn't mean anything. I'm but one insignificant voice. This is something from Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and Rav Arora. Quote, the dangerous illusion of scientific consensus. I'll just quote a paragraph of this. Then I'd like your feedback. You can give us a call and tell us what you think on any of these topics. Because what I'm trying to show you is that what the establishment is saying we should do, you should almost always do the opposite. Their science is completely fraudulent. Their public health policies are fraudulent. Their political ideologies are fraudulent. But maybe I'm wrong on this. Challenge me if you want on this. Call me and say, Gary, you're wrong. Okay. I believe that we should have universal health care. I've written an article. I sent it to every member of Congress. And in it, I show how we should not have to spend more than $1.7 trillion a year. And everyone is covered for everything. But it also means you have to eliminate medical malpractice. So no doctor has to do defensive medicine, meaning a doctor will do dozens of tests on you do not need, because the lawyers say, test for everything. In case we get sued, we could say, well, we tested for that. But that spends hundreds of billions of dollars we don't need. Get rid of it and have universal liability insurance. 1% of the profits of the hospital industry goes to pay for the defense, and then cap the awards. So that way a doctor goes through college medical school and pay for their education and pay for their internship and residency, because doctors commit an enormous amount of debt obligations before they get to practice medicine, and then include within the curriculum peer review library medicine studies on alternative medicine. So they have to learn about chiropractic, oriental medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, a traditional Native American medicine, but only those that have been proven scientifically to work and are in the journals. So it's not quackery. It's in your own library of medicine. That's the repository of the greatest information. So now you got a person who's more of an idealist going into medical school than going into residency and internship without bleeding and being highly stressed, and they're learning a comprehensive preventative model, have preventative community clinics in every city in the United States where people can go in and be on programs to lose weight, get off drugs, to have themselves checked with blood chemistry, see if they're nutrient deficient, have models, I don't mean human models, I mean model programs that people can become a part of. So if they're lonely or depressed or anxious, they can become a part of a support system that brings them up, brings their energy up, has a support system, keeps you more focused on the positives of life. That's all part of what a universal healthcare should be. Everyone got it, not a single person responded. And why? Because the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want to spend $1.7 trillion and eliminate the insurance industry altogether. Instead, they want to make huge profits. The people that own the hospitals, huge profits. The people bought out the medical centers in the city and created a consortium. So wherever you go, you're controlled by the same profiteers, the equity partners. They want $4 billion. That's what's being spent this year. So imagine we could actually save money, help people live longer, prevent disease, take the stress all out of doctors, not be overtested, get away from medical fraud, get the yoke of the insurance industry's unmitigated greed off our backs. That's just one idea. I shared that idea with Robert Kennedy Jr. and his campaign manager, Dennis Kucinich, with the hope that they might consider something like that. Secondly, let's limit terms of office to one term. That's it, one term. Otherwise, look at these dinosaurs, you know, who are in there who are just dumb, greedy, rich, and completely captured ideologically and politically. Let's ban all money in all elections. So a baker, a shoemaker, a civil servant can run for an office and have a chance to get elected because money cannot influence the elections. Simple things. And I have 50 of these, you know, ideas that I presented. I post them. They're up on my website. Nope. Why does nobody ever look at this stuff? Because it's too simple. Don't conflate the idea that every serious problem requires a serious solution, equally as complicated and convoluted. It doesn't. So when the good professor of epidemiology and professor of medicine out at Stanford University, who was part of the people saying the lockdowns are wrong, he's written this article. I'm just going to read a paragraph to you. Science is the process by which we learn about the working of material reality. Though modern innovations built on the fruits of science would look like magic to people living only decades ago, they result from the time-tested scientific method. Contrary, perhaps, to media portrayals of science, the scientific method depends not only on the existence of a mythological consensus, but rather on structured scientific debates. If there is a consensus, science challenges it with new hypotheses, experiments, and logic, and critical thinking. Ironically, science advances because it believes it has never arrived. Consensus is a hallmark of dead science. Okay, good. And then there's a whole article there. And by the way, keep in mind that he is professor of health policy at Stanford University School of Medicine. He's both an MD and a PhD, and decades of experience writing on infectious disease epidemiology. Well, everyone in the science was wrong when it came to AIDS. Oh, but we were right. We cured people, they killed people. And yet, all the science had been corrupted. And all the spokespersons for that corrupted science themselves were rewarded. But the people, the patients who were working towards an honest explanation of AIDS and how to both prevent it and treat it, those people were called AIDS denialists. So this has gone on for a long time. The health, true health advocates are almost always demeaned and attacked. Those who promote disease are rewarded. Look at the tobacco industry. Look at the junk food industry. Look at the beer industry. Look at the alcohol industry. Look at the mythical, euphoric, ethereal success ladder. Climb that ladder. What's there? Everything you'd ever want. Just look at Jay-Z and Beyonce. Aren't they happy? Aren't they loving? Well, they got a lot of material stuff. Look at Oprah. Yeah. Going up and down. Yeah. Okay. Well, she's a billionaire. She can do whatever she wants with her money and eat as much food as she wants. But it's good to own a company that causes people to lose weight if they follow that protocol. We are incapable of looking at something from the larger picture. We look at what we're told to look at. Look over here. Look over there. That's the truth. How do I know it's the truth? Because I say it's the truth. We have a consensus. Look at us. Look at all the celebrities. Look at where we live. We live where the consensus of success is. So we worked hard, and now we live in a place that we don't, that we're never really happy with. We need something more because our neighbor got something more. They got a $1 million car, and we only have a $400,000 car. So all because you followed a protocol of consensus, work hard, pull yourself up. Nonsense. That never happens. What happens is we work together to achieve something. Did you ever watch the Amish put together a barn in a day and it would take you a year to do? They work together on that. Now, I'm not saying that the Amish have a better belief system. I'm saying that at least they have mastered the art of cooperation. When was the last time anyone cooperated with anyone else? How about all the people who could cooperate and learn another way? Did you know that you can grow your hair better and faster, even if it's dormant, with acupuncture? No, I didn't know that. Well, why don't we all know that? Well, then you'd be competing with all the people trying to sell you a product to rub on your scalp. I see. So we're into competition, but not cooperation. That's correct. So our science is consensus-based because long you're in the consensus line, here's your check, here's your check, here's your check, get your check up, but here's your check. I see. So as long as I walk into a bureaucracy, a technocracy, duopoly, and I hold my hand out, someone's going to put something in it. You bet. That's kind of stupid, isn't it? Yeah, it is. But that's where we're at. We're at stupid. But not everyone's stupid. An awful lot of people still live an ethical, moral quality of life. And they've learned to live with other people of other ethnicities and become enriched by it, and cultures become enriched by it. Languages and skills. And this is like children coming together. There's no racism in these children. There's joy. There's exploring. We should still have the mindset of innocent children in appreciating the uniqueness. And there are people doing exactly that, and there's an abundance of them in this world. Don't pay attention to them, though. Pay attention to the people who tell us that the consensus of their values is what we should follow. The World Economic Forum, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, and all these other people, because they're successful and you're not. That means that if they're successful, they're happy. They have power. They get invited places. They walk on red carpets. Why not walk on a blue carpet, a black carpet, a white carpet? No, it's got to be a red carpet because the average person never has a chance to walk on a red carpet. They may clean a red carpet. They may make a red carpet, but that's irrelevant. It's who walks on it. And then watch these prancing, peacocks of indulging narcissism talk as if they have something relevant to say. And when was the last time someone who was rich and famous and powerful had anything relevant to say? It's all about them. And that's why do not trust either political consensus, educational consensus. But we have to have that, Gary. We have 3,000 administrators. Yeah, and what about the teacher and the student? They're irrelevant. I see. Well, charter schools work. Your school doesn't. Don't look there. I see. So don't look where the truth is. Look where the lies have been consensualized. Yes, we lie together. Okay, your call. I'm going to say goodbye to BAI right now. We're going to go up and I'm going to take calls. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. BI is listening to the news right now, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about any of the things that I've put out there today. And while you're thinking about calling in, I'll just share a few more thoughts with you. This is from the newest article. Cambridge University's Anglo-Saxon History Department decides Anglo-Saxons never actually existed. Hold on a second. You would have to be, well, someone would have had to take an egg beater, open up your ears large enough to get it in and scramble your brains to be that delusional. Of course Anglo-Saxons existed. No, they didn't, Gary, because some woke people here say it didn't. Quote, news has just come down from the United Kingdom Telegraph that the venerable dons of Cambridge University, established in 1209, by the way, Department of Anglo-Saxon, Norse, and Celtic History, apparently suffered from a profound crisis of identity, will now be instructing their students that, quote, Anglo-Saxons aren't real, end quote. Apparently, anti-racists at Cambridge have determined that the phrase Anglo-Saxon smacks too much of, quote, the myth of nationalism. God, you gotta be a special type of idiot to believe in this crap. So stay away from the universities. In fact, even driving by a university, if you look over to it, your IQ drops 22 points. I heard that somewhere. So we have to be just aware of what's going on, all right? So now they're saying Anglo-Saxons didn't exist. Well, there's all of human history proving they did. But that's all right. Let a couple of these idiots, and they are idiots, say that it offends us. Everything offends you, little twerps. Everything. And what exactly have you contributed to anything or anyone? Nothing. Nothing. Give us our safe spaces. Oh. Okay, you want to say you want a teddy bear and a warm room and some milk and cookies? Yeah, that's where you should lock yourself up and stay. Quote, this alone suggests why the entire exercise is such insultingly a historical nonsense. First of all, nationalism is not a myth. While in its modern form as a politically unifying force giving coherence to an internationally recognized state, it is certainly a creation of the 19th century. The German word Deutsch literally descends from the Proto-Indo-European root that functionality means us people as distinct from them. It must be understood that the complexities of British identity are various and ongoing, and the idea of a national identity as one that binds together different races, native languages, or ethnicities is as old as, well, as old as British Isles themselves. Once upon a time, these islands were occupied by dark-skinned, blue-eyed hunter-gatherers. Then those were wiped out by Neolithic Anatolian farmers. Then those were almost entirely genetically replaced by Indo-European horse warriors. First, presumably, the speaking of their own language, and then by the Germanic-speaking Anglo-Saxons. Believe me, the cold recitation there doesn't come close to approximating the human strife involved in these population movements. And yet, they have control in this moment. That's unfortunate. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. You can go to Gary Nall YouTube, because I'm sharing every day a different lesson on life, and it's important for a lot of people. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback. It's a classroom on the air. Have a nice day, everyone. Now wait for Utrecht Leach. She's coming right at you.